Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. It's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to our pre-Thanksgiving award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, this morning, as we head into both the biggest eating week of the year and the holiday season, we're going to be addressing diabetes prevention during National Diabetes Awareness Month with the Diabetes Education Program Coordinator at St. Francis Hospital and Medical Center. Then, marking National Epilepsy Awareness Month, we'll be visiting again with the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate before we head to Chicago to chat with the title star of the musical Hamilton about a new epilepsy awareness campaign that can put you in the spotlight. Then we'll close with our consumer watchdog from Connecticut BBB, Howard Schwartz, warning us about a number of concerns the Better Business Bureau is dealing with as we approach the holiday season and New Year, including how to get the best deals on Black Friday. We're going to be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. The Animal Haven, a nonprofit no-kill shelter serving the greater New Haven area since 1948, is holding its 2017 holiday fair on Saturday, November 25th from 9 until 2 at the North Haven Congregational Church across from the town green. Admission is free and all proceeds benefit the shelter. There are going to be handmade goods and gifts, a bake sale, refreshments, and games. Donations of canned and dry cat and dog food will be accepted at the fair as well, and volunteers are still needed to help. To learn more or to donate new handmade items or baked goods to sell at the fair, you can contact the event chairperson at 203-484-9648 or just click on theanimalhaven.com. Well, here we are nearing the end of November, heading into Thanksgiving week, and we have yet to hearken the fact that November is not only Diabetes Awareness Month, but also Epilepsy Awareness Month. We're going to be dealing with both of those subjects in the program this morning. It's fantastic that I am able to bring a very new friend to the program. Layla Bruno's on the line with us right now. She is a Diabetes Education Program Coordinator for the Center for Diabetes and Metabolic Care at St. Francis Hospital and Medical Center, diabetes, and it's estimated that 1 in 11 Americans has the disease, more than 29 million people. But the bad news is another 86 million have pre-diabetes and are at risk for developing type 2 diabetes. It's one of the leading causes of disability and death in the United States. It can cause blindness, nerve damage, kidney disease, and other health problems if it's not controlled. Sadly, I had to witness some of that in my own, and a loved one in my own family. 1 in 10 Americans have diabetes, and the good news we will learn is that people who are at high risk for type 2 diabetes can lower that risk by more than half if they make healthy changes. So let's get into the conversation talking about the healthy changes that folks may have to make before Thanksgiving and holiday feasts begin to present themselves to them versus folks that might want to think about it after, or maybe even as a New Year's resolution. Great to have you on the program, Layla. So here we are coming into Thanksgiving week, and for all of the folks who may have diabetes or even pre-diabetes and they're not yet diagnosed, what are a few of the quick things that you could tell people that they might want to consider avoiding, even though they might be sort of popular Thanksgiving or holiday meal components?
Great question. Thank you for having me on today. So many of the foods that we enjoy, specifically at the Thanksgiving feast, are carbohydrate-rich foods. Things like sweet potato pie and pumpkin pie and fresh-baked bread or rolls. We might have apple pie. We might have mashed potatoes and peas. We might have something like a pecan pie, depending on what part of the country you're from.
Right.
These foods are all rich in carbohydrates, and any food containing carbohydrate turns into glucose or sugar during digestion. So these foods will spike the blood sugar levels after the meal, and depending on the other contents of the meal, that blood sugar may remain elevated for upwards of 2 to upwards of 6 hours after the meal. And many people might complain of being very sleepy afterwards, or noticing poor concentration or increased urination, which potentially are symptoms of high blood sugar.
So is it sort of ironically coincidental that the kind of typical meals that people may enjoy at Thanksgiving could actually almost serve them in some way as a more heightened warning sign that they may have diabetes?
Certainly that's a potential. Absolutely. You know, many people are not really aware of those symptoms of high blood sugar, and the symptoms themselves, of course, don't diagnose diabetes, but they're a warning sign. They're an increased risk, and when we have typically a larger than normal meal at Thanksgiving, we might have that very large carbohydrate amount of food that the body just can't process and break down in a normal time frame, and we get some of those symptoms of those very high blood sugars.
Okay, so if people are sort of now listening and going to pay a little bit more attention in those hours in the day after the big Thanksgiving feast, what are a few of the things that might be happening to them that weren't happening with a more concentrated and sparse diet up until that day and those hours after?
So blood sugars, based just on the carbohydrate intake, will rise and fall within 2 to 3 hours. The combination of protein coming from the turkey and fat coming from the butter and the other ingredients that make the meal taste delicious can prolong how long that high blood sugar remains in the body. The more fat there is, the longer that blood sugar may remain elevated. Mm-hmm. So during that let's say 2 to 6 to 8 hour time frame post the meal, we may experience feeling excessively tired. We might notice that we're really parched, very dry mouth and an excessive thirst. We might notice that we're needing to use the bathroom more frequently. Some people might have an upset stomach. Some people might just not feel right. They might just feel off.
Mm.
And those can be symptoms of diabetes, but again, symptoms by themselves don't tell us the whole story. We would prompt going to the doctor and having a blood test to find out what's going on.
Right.
It's a simple blood test that can determine that.
Oh, good.
I would be more concerned about those symptoms happening on a regular basis rather than just after one meal, which we know is excessive in carbohydrate foods.
Oh, I see.
One thing that we can do to reduce that risk and to reduce those symptoms is take a walk after the meal is over. When you exercise, you lower your blood sugar because your muscles are taking up that sugar from the bloodstream. So it's exiting the bloodstream and being utilized by the muscles during exercise, so the blood sugars come back down to normal, tends to make us feel better again.
Right. And we also talked about the prevention factor and the fact that individuals can lower their likelihood of contracting type 2 diabetes by making certain lifestyle changes. We do know there's a type 3 diabetes that impacts a very, very tiny fractional amount of the population, with type 2 being most widespread. Can you just give us the kind of the elevator conversation about the difference between types 1 and 2 diabetes?
Of course. So type 1 diabetes represents only about 5 to 10% of the population, whereas type 2 diabetes is 90 to 95%. Type 1 diabetes is believed to be an autoimmune disorder where something goes awry in the body and the immune system attacks the cells of the pancreas that produce insulin. Insulin is a hormone that's responsible for controlling the blood sugar levels. So in type 1 diabetes, those cells in the pancreas that make the hormone insulin are completely destroyed, and as a result, blood sugars rise very sharply and very rapidly. Typically, there's no warning signs much more than a few days prior to the diagnosis of type 1 diabetes, and the treatment is immediate and lifelong insulin therapy. Typically, type 1 diabetes is diagnosed under the age of 25, most commonly in young people under the age of, let's say, 16 or 18.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas type 2 diabetes is more considered a lifestyle diabetes, we don't know exactly what the hallmark one thing is that's causing type 2 diabetes, but there's a constellation of things going on that might promote or predict the development of type 2. So the first thing is your genetics. If you have a family history of type 2 diabetes, that definitely increases the risk for yourself developing type 2 diabetes. Certain ethnicities seem to be at a much higher risk to develop type 2 diabetes, and that may include African Americans, Hispanics, Native Americans, Asians, and Indians.
Okay.
And so type 2 diabetes is not only the genetic component, which is a big part of it, but it's also a lifestyle disease. It's very much related to overweight and obesity, people who have a very high stress level chronically, or a sudden very huge stress can be like a trigger, like a light switch going off, changing something in the body.
Or a traumatic event or something
Or a traumatic event, exactly.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. And typically we think of type 2 diabetes mostly being an adult onset condition, largely over the age of 40. However, again, age is not the only factor, because we do have, unfortunately, an onset of overweight and obesity in our young people, and they're also developing type 2 diabetes in relation to the obesity.
Are there one or two specific low-impact things that people can do that could hedge against acquiring type 2 diabetes?
So there's a couple of quick dietary things that I can recommend, and in addition to that, exercise. Exercise does not need to be intense exercise. The research shows that a 30-minute walk 5 days a week at a moderately brisk pace is sufficient to help lower those blood sugar levels. So the first thing is get moving. The second thing is to slightly change your diet to not such a high concentration of carbohydrates in the meal plan. And one of our biggest challenges is sweetened beverages. If you're a soda drinker, a juice drinker, an iced tea drinker, switching over to water or seltzer or a sugar-free version of your favorite beverage can really make a big difference, both in the carbohydrate intake you have as well as the calories that you're consuming from that beverage.
Excellent. Those sound like doable resolutions.
They do. And the third thing that I would add is a small percent of weight loss. A very large study was done in showing us prevention of diabetes through 7 to 10% of your current weight, which for many people is between 15 and 30 pounds. It's not a huge amount of weight to lose, but it gives you the biggest bang for your buck, metabolically speaking, so that 7 to 10% weight loss can reduce your risk of diabetes by more than 50%.
Great. Well, these are all things we can begin practicing the day after Thanksgiving, but for now, your information has been spectacular in terms of how it can educate people going into this sort of eating season of Thanksgiving week and beyond, and wrapping it up with the things that they should be doing after they eat. So we want to thank you so much for this quick lesson on how to hopefully prevent type 2 diabetes. Lila Bruno is Diabetes Education Program Coordinator for the Center for Diabetes and Metabolic Care at St. Francis Hospital and Medical Center. Happy Thanksgiving, Lila. Thank you so much. Well, for those of you who missed him last November, we're very pleased to have back in the studio with us the Connecticut epilepsy advocate, Robert Fiore, who unfortunately could not be here last year to remind us about National Epilepsy Awareness Month. But we have him back now, and we're not going to let him go. It'll be another 10 straight years of Bob Fiore on the program. And we're so pleased to have him in studio with us, along with a brand new friend and special guest, Amber St. Jakes. And we'll be talking at the local level to some extent for the first part of the program. And then we'll be picking up the phone and calling out to Chicago to another special guest. We'll be talking to Miguel Cervantes, who happens to be the star, yes, the title star of the musical Hamilton. And sadly, his life is also touched by epilepsy, but he has taken the challenge to heart and has helped to initiate something called the My Shot at Epilepsy Challenge. So we'll be talking to him about that toward the end of our segment here this morning. But without further ado, let's bring Robert Fiore back on the microphone for a few minutes just to remind us all about the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate and the great work that you're doing, Robert.
Thank you so much.
Welcome
John.
Back.
It's great to be back. Sorry about missing last year, but hey, we're back. Hey, November is Epilepsy Awareness Month, as you mentioned, and for the people out there, the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate proudly serves the entire state of Connecticut. We're based in Milford. where we help everybody we can. You should learn about our website, which is ct-ea.org. And you probably don't know this, everyone out there, but in Connecticut, epilepsy affects approximately 60,000 people. And that's a lot for one state.
Yeah.
And we do everything we can to help those people living with epilepsy.
And one of them is right here with us today.
Yes. I have a fabulous friend, Amber.
So, hi, Amber. Thanks for coming in.
As
we briefly chatted before we turned on the microphone this morning, have epilepsy. Was this something that developed as you were growing up or something that you've been living with since you can remember?
No, basically it just came out of the blue about 6 years ago now.
Nothing seemingly to precipitate it.
No, I mean, I had a few blanking out spells in the past that I never really paid attention to.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of thought they were more like a daydream. And then in 2012, I woke up in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
and I had had a few tonic-clonics, a.k.a. grand mals, uh-huh. overnight, just developed out of nowhere.
Scared the dickens out of somebody?
Yes. I am married.
Yes, yeah.
So.
All right. So you, in your probably grappling for support and information, you came across Robert's initiative?
Mm-hmm. I did. It took me a while to seek out support because you kind of, when you're going through something, you kind of feel alone. You don't realize that there's so many people that are affected. And I didn't know about Bob's organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very lucky to come across him. He has done plenty, you know, he has gone beyond for me, and I'm certain of other people.
Right.
I know what he does, and it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
What he's done for me, you know, from right down to my Medic Alert bracelet, which I wear every day, mm-hmm. diligently. I have been hospitalized a few times. I've had quite a few episodes, issues. And he's been there for support,
mm-hmm.
all the time.
Yeah.
I do have to make a decision regarding upcoming brain surgery. It's not something that I really want to do.
Sure.
But if it, you know, has to be done. But, you know, along with family members, Bob will be one of the people I seek out.
Mm.
You know, I trust his opinion. And his advice and, you know, what he's been through.
Well, tell us a little bit about what your medical team is telling you are their hopes regarding the surgery.
It should be. I guess what I have, and I keep mispronouncing the name, is an encephalogeal, like encephalitis.
Encephalogeal, yep.
And it's in my left temporal lobe,
mm-hmm.
you know, on the outside of my skull. I'm relieved. I don't think they're going to have to go
intracranial.
Yeah. It'll be more of, you know, superficial, but it's still brain surgery.
Yeah. Yeah.
They do think it'll help, but, you know, who really knows?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, the 50-50 chance is better than nothing.
Absolutely.
And a willing and motivated patient is the doctor's best friend.
Yeah.
So that's great. Tell us about some of the other services or resources you were able to draw through your relationship with the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate.
Like I said, I have my Medic Alert bracelet. I have check-ins frequently. Bob calls and bothers me sometimes. You know,
sure.
he talks a lot.
Yeah.
But he's always there. Like, I mean, he even called my room when I was in the hospital.
Okay.
I was like, who the heck is calling my hospital room? But it was him checking on me to make sure that he really got through.
Yeah, that's great.
I participated in the strikeout epilepsy last year.
Mm-hmm.
That was a blast, and it was great to meet people, too. You know, everybody has their stories, and you really come together.
There's a little bit of comfort and safety in numbers.
Absolutely.
I'm sure when you woke up that first time in the hospital, you felt like you were the only one.
Yeah, you know, you don't realize.
Pretty traumatic.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Well, it's great to hear that you not only have a great resource and experienced an empathetic partner in this new journey that you're on in recent years, but that you're taking some pretty decisive steps to try to address it. So that's yes. great news.
Yes.
You know, when Robert talks about representing all of Connecticut, it's not just this kind of website, Facebook activities thing. He really goes to bat to the nth degree, and that means even to the halls of the State House. And 1 year ago, or just over a year ago, House Bill 5450 passed. Robert, tell us a little bit about that and what you feel at least the short-term success has been and where we can go under the power of this legislation at this point.
Thank you. As you're aware, we tried for 3 years in a row to introduce what became House Bill 5450, which is the palliative use of medical marijuana for children. And we advocated that for a multitude of reasons. First, for children. Second, the type of cannabis oil that's used in that. It is high in CBD and low in THC. The one allowed in the state of Connecticut, the THC, the tetrahydrocannabidiol, has to be at 0.3% or less.
Yeah, essentially the intoxicating element of marijuana.
Exactly. And the thing is, the original formula that came out of Colorado, Charlotte's Web, it's actually available now in Connecticut. So that has zero THC, and that could be shipped to you from out of state.
Legally, even though you need to have a medical marijuana card.
You still need the card
if there's
and
THC in it.
Right.
Yeah.
But since this has zero, it's completely different.
So it can be bought as a supplement.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Exactly.
Very good.
But again, my focus was the children. I've seen too many kids suffering from epilepsy, whether it's generalized epilepsy, Dravet syndrome, LGS, which is Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, and it's their last resort. So why not let them try it?
Mm. Very good. And now, again, there you have eyes on the State House again this year.
Yes. There's two bills that I submitted. We'll see what happens. The first is for everyone, so they don't pay these ridiculous co-pays or DAW, which means dispenses written penalties. We introduced the bill so everyone on every medication in the state of Connecticut can either get the brand prescribed by doctor, be it generic or not, at a set copay. So hypothetically, let's say my epilepsy medication that comes from UCB Pharmaceutical, I need that particular manufacturer, and I pay a premium like you can't believe. So let's say the generic is $10 a month. I'll gladly pay $20 a month. But in my case, even with my wife's insurance, in January, we drop $2,900, and then the rest of the year is free. That's ludicrous. And we helped a woman whose husband's DAW, again, dispenses written penalty, not fee, penalty, is over $3,000. Plus, they have the copay on top of that. That is something we have to change.
Mm-hmm. And is there another element to the legislation or another piece of legislation you're also working on, or is that it?
Well, the other one is not epilepsy related. It's just a matter of we're looking in to try to get more choices for television so you're not stuck with one cable channel or satellite, things like that.
Oh, I see.
But,
okay.
The focus here is epilepsy.
So who in the State House is helping you introduce and champion this work that you're doing?
Well, there is a standard protocol. I had to send it to my state senator, Gail Schlossberg, and we CC'd it to the three state representatives serving Milford and also went to the two co-chairs of the Public Health Committee. So that way everyone received it and they all can read it.
Excellent. Folks, if you want to learn more about the resources available to you, about the great work that that Robert and his folks are doing at the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate, you can visit their website, ct-ea.org, or you could check out the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate on Facebook, other socials too, your Twitter.
Oh, yeah, Facebook, Twitter. And if you don't mind, John, quickly. Yeah. Since we last seen each other, the website is completely new.
I'm looking at it right now. It's pretty spectacular.
Thank you. Yeah, it was time for a change,
looking
and
good.
Now even more so. It's easy to navigate.
Yep. And this is a a registered 501c3 organization. So if anyone's out there who's looking to become a partner with the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate, I'm sure they'd love to entertain that opportunity. Any type of monetary donation is great. And I have to remind you, Amber mentioned she had such a great time last year at Strikeout Epilepsy, which is a bowl-a-thon, that we'd ask you to mark your date. It's an easy one to remember. Tax Day, April 15th, 2018. Strikeout Epilepsy will be coming back to the Nutmeg Bowl in Fairfield, Connecticut. Thank you, Nutmeg Bowl, for supplying your venue for this fantastic event. And Robert, thank you as always for your incredible work. As we mentioned, almost going on 20 years that we've known each other here, and to see how you've gone from just a concerned individual suffering with epilepsy to someone who has national, if not global, ties and are doing such incredible work. As well as I would be remiss in not mentioning also spearheading a number of very successful blood drives as well in the greater Milford and New Haven areas.
Thank you.
Just fantastic work. Such an honor to know you and have you back again on track here on the program. And we celebrate National Epilepsy Awareness Month with you, and hope that this program can bring a number of other people to your great resources. We'll say farewell to you and shuffle off to the Windy City now, to Chicago, to meet Miguel Cervantes, who's playing Hamilton in the Roadshow production of Hamilton, and get you guys all up to speed on how you can throw your finger in the air, take a photo or a video of yourself, and join the My Shot at Epilepsy Challenge. So, Robert, Amber, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us, and thank you, Bob.
Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. This is Director of Public Affairs John Boquette. We'll be back to the pre-Thanksgiving award-winning For the People right after this news. Lieutenant Governor Nancy Wyman and the Connecticut National Guard have launched the 16th annual Operation ELF. That stands for Embracing Lonely Families. It's a holiday drive to support military families who are in the deployment cycle. Donations of gift cards for grocery and department or home goods stores, pharmacies, and gas stations help support military families throughout the year. And donations of fuel oil, snow removal, and home maintenance services are also needed. New winter clothing and unwrapped toys for young people of all ages are welcome as well. So to find out more about drop locations or how to donate gift cards or services, just visit ct.ng.mil/ELF. All right. Well, November is National Epilepsy Awareness Month. And before we ratchet things back here to the exciting things going on in Connecticut with our longstanding guest, Rob Fiore of the Connecticut Epilepsy Advocate, we're going to take it out to Chicago because, anything that's stamped with Hamilton, whether it's the actual legal tender or the Broadway show, is something that's really, really exciting. And we were excited to be offered an opportunity to talk with Miguel Cervantes, who is in the Chicago production of this globally famous musical, Hamilton. And we are talking with him today because he is working with Citizens United for Research in Epilepsy, which is called CURE, and the Epilepsy Foundation. And they are going to be raising critically needed awareness and action for epilepsy research. Miguel, thanks for calling into us from Chicago this morning.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on this very important subject.
So important to you because it really does touch you as personally as it could. Let's talk about your situation.
Yeah, epilepsy, I think maybe I speak for most people when you say you sort of have a very vague idea of what it is. It's the seizures, it's the shaking, it's the flashing lights, those kind of things. Hits you right in a personal way. My daughter was born in October of 2015, and we knew something was a little bit wrong. And after a few tests and a few, we were trying to find out what was going on. The word epilepsy came into our life. She had a seizure around 7 months old, and we had the diagnosis of infantile spasms 2 months later. So immediately we became much more well-versed on what epilepsy is and all the difficulties that go along with epilepsy. So, you know, as I, my family, my wife and I are starting to, you know, deal with this devastating news about our daughter, the other side of my life is I'm getting this unbelievable news that I'm going to be cast as Hamilton in the first Chicago production of Hamilton. So talk about the highest highs and the lowest lows, all in the same month, May of last year. So, you know, we moved to Chicago and immediately my wife had been working as an event sales and coordination, in New York City, mm-hmm. and happened to know that this cure was a thing before epilepsy was part of our life. Cure was part of her life in a weird way. And so we came to Chicago and it was a perfect fit to use Hamilton to join forces with Cure and do what we can.
And in fact, I guess it was a number from the musical that plays a central role in your efforts to both educate people and help raise awareness and support for research.
Absolutely. You know, the theme, you know, the first act theme, you know, a lot of people know, you know, I'm not throwing away my shot as part of one of the major themes of Hamilton. And I think that holds true to many aspects in our life. And so in my life and my wife's life and our family, we decided to not throw away our shot at doing what we can to raise awareness and the much needed funds for research to develop better, more and better treatments for epilepsy. So, you know, our campaign started last year with the local sort of thing, you know, tickets and we did a few private concerts, et cetera. This year, we want to get a little bit broader. We want to spread it out all over the internet universe. And I want everyone to take their shot. You know, Hamilton throws his hand up in the sky and says, I'm not throwing away my shot. I'm asking everyone to throw their finger to the sky, point to the sky, and take their shot at helping us raise awareness. Take a picture of yourself. I invite you and expect you to put your picture up, finger to the sky, and show everyone that we are all taking our shot to raise awareness and funds for this fight that we're in. And you know, want to spread it around. And you know, one of our goals is to make epilepsy as important and as in the conversation as all of these other major neurological problems. You know, Parkinson's and Alzheimer's are these terribly debilitating diseases, and epilepsy, it absolutely should be in that conversation as something that is given attention and funding to find better treatments. You know, my daughter is 2 years old. She functions as a 2-month-old level, 3-month-old level child, and, you know, seizures are a main reason. You know, one of the misconceptions about epilepsy, it's just the shaking thing. And you know, I'm sure your next guest, he can speak a lot to this as well. You know, it gets in there and just causes havoc in a brain and can make the smallest things so much harder to do, if not impossible. Yeah. And to watch my daughter go through this, I can do nothing but use my platform and my role as Hamilton to yell to the sky and say, we need to make changes and we need to have better treatments. And that's what we're doing.
Right. And along with being saddled with the impact and effects of epilepsy, Miguel, also is the stigma that these young children face. I mean, kids are kids universally. It doesn't matter how smart you are or how well educated you are. When something goes wrong with a peer in a classroom, on the bus, on the soccer field, and they start experiencing the effects of the epilepsy that they're suffering from, there's nothing that can keep another peer of that child from being fearful and concerned. And the other thing we really try to work on this program is for individuals from developmental disabilities to individuals with epilepsy to try to educate people in defeating the stigma that these so many of these kids face.
I mean, that couldn't be more true. You know, the idea of the unknown of what epilepsy is and what it does to people, and that it's, you know, while it is a scary thing and seizures are a scary thing, it's a medical condition. It's something that is, you know, for my money here, the idea for me is to educate and tell people this is something that is happening that we need to try to happen less. You know, we need to have better treatments so that this happens less, and for people to understand that this is a disease that needs more work, and so that we can get rid of those stigmas, so that people don't have to worry about this happening. That there's an understanding of what it is and why so much more work needs to be done. I really agree that the idea of what epilepsy is needs to be more talked about, so that it's more understood, so that these stigmas can get squashed. You know, yeah. It's really important.
Yeah, well, certainly the need to do something is great. And you, as the great new lead of Hamilton in Chicago, you are doing something with this new program. It's called My Shot at Epilepsy Challenge. And Miguel is here on our program this morning from Chicago, helping to get folks here in Connecticut and the greater New York and Boston areas to take their shot. So as you kind of got into explaining a few minutes ago, Miguel, people are to take a kind of a selfie or a still photo or a video of themselves striking that Hamilton pose with the finger in the air. But also equally important is to try to provide some support. No amount is too small, but they can actually make a donation toward the cause and the research to finding a cure through myshotatepilepsy.org. And you're using the full word at, not the at symbol. So it's myshotatepilepsy.org. And then telling all your friends and social network followers about it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's sort of the idea, is to challenge your friends, be creative, do something cool, groups of people, costumes, underwater. You know, all of these things are completely in the realm of what we want to do. Get your friends to do it. Challenge your friends to do it. Spread it as far as we can. Make a donation. You know, send it across the world if we can, because it's fun. It's cool. It's a great way to use the Hamilton and My Shot aspect, and it's just a great way to spread awareness of the word epilepsy, the word seizure, and how much work we need to do.
So you're going to get your video, you're going to take your photos of you striking the Hamilton pose, and go to hashtag My Shot at Epilepsy and
yes,
hashtag capital C-U-R-E epilepsy. Tag your friends, challenge them to participate within 24 hours. This is an exciting way to both educate and support and break down the stigmas associated with epilepsy. And it's great to have Miguel Cervantes with us, who is playing Hamilton in the Chicago production of this globally famous musical. It officially launched on November 1st for Epilepsy Awareness Month, this My Shot at Epilepsy Challenge, this awareness campaign. And we hope you'll join Miguel Cervantes and the thousands, if not tens of thousands of others throughout November who are going to throw their finger in the air and take that shot at epilepsy. Miguel Cervantes, thank you for your efforts. And we know that with people like you and the energy that you and your family are putting toward this, not only in your own home, but also around the world with advertisements and promotion like this, that we're going to be that much closer to a cure. And hopefully we will see that in our lifetime. So thank you so much for joining us this morning. All right. Well, fall is turning into winter here in Connecticut, and that means it's time for our end of the year and holiday visit with Howard Schwartz, Executive Communications Director for Better Business Bureau, serving all of Connecticut out of their offices in Cromwell. BBB.org/Connecticut is their website if you'd like to find out all of the consumer protection benefits and information that they offer. And also, if you're a business that wants to find out how to get that BBB stamp of approval, you can find it all out there. Howard, great to be with you again. And as we play this, we are less than a week away from that day known as Black Friday. And I understand we're going to start off this morning talking about Black Friday and some warnings and concerns that you have for consumers.
Yeah, hi, John. It's ironic that it's no longer Black Friday so much as Black November. We saw a lot of big retailers rolling out their specials at the beginning of the month. So, and we can expect this to go on till the end of the year and probably beyond that. I think there are a few things that we should keep in mind. For example, we find that impulse buying is one of the problems with Black Friday. And when I say problem, it means we set ourselves a budget. We see a really great deal on a flat screen TV and say, I'm going to buy it now because this is going to be the cheapest it will be. Well, we don't know that. And this doesn't mean you shouldn't buy it. But what we encourage people to do is to do your research, apples to apples, absolutely. So, for example, you might find a 52-inch flat-screen television that sells for $400 on sale. Well, you might find online that you can get a higher-quality television by the same company for an extra $25. That would be worth it to you. As we head into Black Friday, we also have to remember that there's no real consensus or conventional wisdom now as to whether or if this is the best time to buy, or Small Business Saturday or Cyber Monday. So this is a new playing field really for all of us. And I think this is, you know, we were talking 2 years ago and I was wondering, how is the landscape going to change in the next 2 years? Because it seemed like the sales began in September. So we'll see how things unravel this year. Maybe it'll help us a great deal. But let's remember one thing. We will certainly see some fantastic deals now. And let's remember, it's the last quarter of the year. It's in retailers' interest to get us in the door, and they will do so with the best specials they can. But please do your research.
With holiday season so imminent, and in fact, it almost feels like we're into the holiday rush right now, is it too late for folks to take advantage of what I'm seeing as an apparently very friendly and fertile ground for holiday seasonal employment?
No, it's not too early. And in fact, it's very, very good news, the best we've probably seen since 2008. Because we know as the economy goes, so goes employment and so on. And there are predictions of increased holiday sales over last year, and that's on the part of the retailers themselves. Now, the National Retail Federation, which follows these types of things, believes there'll be a 4.5% increase in terms of the amount that we'll be spending this year. But I think a more telling statistic comes from Career Builder, which says not only will there be more seasonal jobs this year, which of course can turn into full-time jobs, but 43% of hiring managers say they will also be hiring full-time people right off the bat in order to not only help out at this time of year, but to stick around year-round. And of course, the employment situation is better now. There are more jobs for fewer people. So I suppose a couple of things we should remember is that despite the popularity of online purchasing, the brick-and-mortar stores, the smaller stores know that there's something that they can offer that the online experience cannot, and that is face-to-face customer service. And with price points being the way they are, a lot of consumers care deeply about customer service, not having to wait and stand in huge lines. And there are a couple of things that you can do to hedge your bets if you're looking for one of these jobs. First of all, apply where you shop. You might know the merchandise, the culture of the store, the manager. And these are things that will give you the advantage over someone else who applies. Look for jobs that match your skills. Some of us are people. We like to be at the cash register. Others would much rather be in the back and restocking shelves. But what technology has done and the online experience has done as well is we find that there are many more jobs now that are involved in fulfilling, taking the phone calls, placing the orders, making sure they're shipped. And you will see that at the local level as well. But let's not forget florists, caterers, restaurants. They'll have need for extra help at this time of year as well. So it's a good, rosy picture. Hopefully the sales will be that good. And it looks like it really is an employment seeker's market this holiday season.
And you'd think from an employer's standpoint, there'd be an advantage of bringing someone in under the auspices of holiday seasonal employment, and then you have a chance to evaluate from the entire group of new hires to see which ones are the best fit to potentially keep on after the fact. So it probably works both ways.
It does, and it's a win-win situation in as much as they get to see what a person's work ethic is, but you also get the chance as an employee to put your best foot forward, considering, for example, you are not going to get the best hours. The best working hours will go to full-timers. So if you show you're willing to do the work that no one else wants to or at a time that no one else wants to, that says a lot about your work ethic.
Yeah, let that attitude shine. Interesting story, switching to the issue of credit card vulnerabilities. I feel like I'm one of the last people on earth to get a credit card or an ATM with a computer chip on it. And about 3 or 4 months after I got that ATM card, about a month ago, I went to take it out of my wallet and something fell on the floor. And I looked on the floor and it was the chip. The chip actually detached from the credit card. And I went into the bank and they said they had never seen such a thing before. And they had that new credit card with a new chip on its way to me overnight. But I understand that the chip on the credit card also is not always complete insurance against some sort of unscrupulous scammers.
No, and you're the second person I've met probably in as many months who has actually had the chip fall off. Pardon me. Yeah. And it is no surprise. Banks know there is a limited lifespan, up to 2 years, sometimes 2 months, and they'll fail. Yeah. But if we're going to be standing in line for a half an hour, we got a bunch of people in front of us, and we put the chip card in the point-of-sale terminal, and it doesn't work, we're going to be upset. So this is problem number one. Inspect your cards now before you start doing all of your shopping online. But when your chip actually falls off like that, what we don't hear about is that all someone has to do is take that chip, put it on another credit card, and they can use it as if it's yours. Mm. They could put it on a business card, John, and use that as your credit card. Wow. So the chips were never really meant to protect us. It was meant to protect the banks and the issuers from liability, from the fraud. Mm. But this is something that we've got to pay attention to. Just, again, it's also a maintenance issue. You don't want to get caught with the chip coming loose or getting jammed. So it's worth doing.
Okay. Another thing that we've had a flurry of media attention to was this new system that Amazon is offering ostensibly as a security measure, where they're setting up a system by which consumers, ostensibly frequent consumers of Amazon deliveries, are actually allowing their delivery drivers into the house. Tell us a little bit about parcel delivery scams, though. I guess people are still just walking up to the front door and snagging those boxes that are left out in plain sight.
That's right. They follow the delivery trucks, whether it's one of the private companies or the United States Postal Service. They wait till the truck is out of view, and then they'll pluck the package or packages from your front steps or from a common area, like a lobby in an apartment building. Mm. If it's something they want, they'll keep it. If not, they'll just toss it, and you'll never be the wiser for it. Mm-hmm. But there's a new twist on it that is quite complex. We'll boil it down really simply here. There are people who, as you say, will open an account on Amazon to sell things. If they are not reputable, if they don't have a long history, if they don't have any customer reviews, that's a bad sign. Because what some of these people have been doing is, for example, I order a smartphone from them. They take the money, and I get a letter from Amazon, a legitimate one, saying the item has been shipped. And I'm waiting and waiting, and it doesn't appear. And I check with the delivery company, and they say, no, somebody signed for that in this city. So there is no recourse. That package disappeared, but somebody signed for it. So the question is, what happened to the package? Here's where it might seem complicated. The person who's opened up the bogus account, if you will, on Amazon,
the fake retailer,
that's the best way of saying it, takes a box. They might put newspaper and a brick in there or a rock or whatever, and they send it to a business address. And all they want to happen is they'll send it to an address within the same city and have someone sign for it. They open it up. They don't know why the heck someone has sent them a rock in a box. Mm-hmm. But really, all this this rogue retailer individual is trying to do is get you to pay and prove that somebody signed for it. And then they just take off with the money. And unfortunately, it's the consumers who get the dirty end of the stick, because the delivery company and Amazon both say, sorry, that item was shipped and signed for.
Exactly.
So check the people that you're doing business with, see if they have other reviews, if it's a new account or not, and use a credit card always.
Yeah, maybe steer clear if there's absolutely no customer reviews. I don't recall ever seeing a business that had none, and that's certainly got to be a screaming red flag.
That, but in all fairness, I might have never opened an Amazon account and may have only sold one or two things. Mm. But if the person's account has been open a few days, if the person's account has been open 6 months and there are no reviews, yeah, that would certainly be a red flag.
Mm. And has Connecticut BBB or the national BBB weighed in yet on this, the issue of Amazon, which I'm assuming is going to be probably followed by others, offering this kind of put the package inside your door concept?
That's something consumers have been complaining about for a long time, and I think that's something the marketplace will ultimately dictate. So it's hard to say, but as you know, it's extremely competitive out there. And by the way, we're not picking on Amazon when we talk about them, and in, you know, with the package delivery thing. But consumers are getting angry. There are more deliveries than ever before. Things are being left out in the rain, and I think both the U.S. Postal Service and the delivery companies should take note because consumers don't like it.
Very good. Last time we were together was just on the heels of this Equifax data breach, one of the largest data breaches ever anywhere on the planet. And I understand that there's a continuing new chapter to the Equifax issue.
Show me a problem, and I'll show you someone who's trying to take advantage of it. So there are people who are receiving calls. Their caller ID might tell them it's from any one of a number of people. Could be a police department, could be Equifax itself. Of course, it's been faked. And they'll say, this is Equifax calling to verify your account information, the last for your date of birth, your social security number, and of course, the caller is an imposter, and you have just opened yourself up to become the victim of identity theft. Mm. So that's just one scam you might see. Others might be people calling up asking for money to help clean up and protect your ID. And again, one of the keys here, John, and I think for most of the scams we ever talk about, is a forced method of payment. They will only allow payment by wire transfer, by gift card, or by cashier's check. That's a big hint right there.
Mm. Or Bitcoin.
Or Bitcoin. You know, the advantage of Bitcoin is most people don't know how they operate. In fact, even the high-tech people don't know. But yeah, you're very right. So if anyone calls, don't give personal information. They will never call you for that. Don't trust your caller ID. And if it's a robocall, the reviled robocalls, just hang up. But again, be aware that people are impersonating this. We saw this actually happen just before the Affordable Care Act came in, where people would call up and say, if you don't give me this money, then you're going to lose your benefits. So don't be bullied. Don't be frightened into anything.
Yeah, just because somebody says they're Equifax doesn't necessarily and probably actually doesn't probably means that they're not. Because as you pointed out, Equifax isn't cold calling consumers offering help.
Exactly. Equifax won't. We have to remember the people who are asking for who need our personal information will never call or email asking us for it.
And last but not least, we had talked about dietary supplement issues and scams going on, weight loss products that weren't working, but that had million-dollar marketing campaigns that were netting them tens of millions of dollars worth of sales. And we almost kind of had a little celebration over the fact that the Federal Trade Commission came down really hard on a lot of those companies, but now they're not coming through and anteing up on their penalties. Is that right?
Yeah, some of them have not paid the penalties, and therefore they just recently got hit, a bunch of them, with more than $40 million judgment against the defendants. And in imposing those sanctions, the court noted that the defendants really clearly exhibited a pattern of contemptuous conduct since the proceedings began. So it's one thing to have a problem in terms of your comportment after a judgment. But I think really at the heart of this is these snake oil scams have been going on for hundreds of years. What we should know is that I'm not sure why people still believe it, but if there is truly a breakthrough in weight loss technology, it won't be on a pop-up that we see on our computer. Mm. They use the names and the logos of news organizations as endorsements illegally. They have clearly Photoshopped pictures of the models. But here's the most important takeaway message for people. Not only has the Food and Drug Administration said dietary supplements are useless, all of them, But it's also pointed out correctly that you might be on medications, maintenance medications, which, if mixed with some of these supplements, can either make you ill or, worst case scenario, you can have fatal reactions to it. Mm. So there are medical ways of dealing with weight loss. Go and see your doctor if that's the issue. Otherwise, you're throwing away your money and putting yourself at danger.
Sure. And it probably wouldn't be some podiatrist in Southern California that came up with the breakthrough weight loss formula. Certainly, if such a thing was to come to pass, it would be Big Pharma. That would be the one that would be behind it. So, exactly. But wise words as we're moving quickly toward resolution season and people are looking for the easiest way to kickstart or shave off some of those pounds in the new year. So a great way to end our end of the year segment with you. Howard Schwartz is Executive Communications Director for Better Business Bureau serving Connecticut. BBB.org/Connecticut is their website. They have tons more consumer information, advice, scam avoidance tactics. Head for their website, bbb.org/Connecticut, anytime and peruse a much wider selection of information than we could squeeze into this segment this morning. But Howard, happy holidays, happy new year, and we'll see you in the late winter for our next segment.
Will do, John. Same to you. Take care now.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.